Hello friends and welcome to another edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. My name is Andy Warren and in the absence of Mark Heath, we're joined by Mike Bacon.
Hello, nice to be here.
And he's always here, it's Stuart Watson. Hello Stuart.
Hello, how are you?
Alright, bit tired, don't like being the host. But Mark's on holiday, so...
Is this the man that says he never has time off work?
Well, yeah, he's been off all week.
He just come back from his last holiday, the week before last.
I'm not in the strongest position to talk about this because I'm missing the next three games with a holiday of my own, but there we go.
But we're allowed to have holiday, though. That is fine.
That is true.
Have you had any holiday this year at all, Mike?
Not much, no. I just had August off.
Just August this
and
year.
A bit of July.
The bacon slot, as it's called.
And a couple of weeks of September, and that was about it.
Well, it's nice to see you anyway.
Thanks for popping in.
Do
I look tanned?
You're looking good.
Thank you.
But it's been an emotional morning in the bacon household, hasn't it?
Yes.
From what we've heard.
The oldest son has gone on his gap year, which will mean the house tidies up a little bit, but the wife's a bit emotional. I'll just have to go down to the pub and drink to him, I think, tonight.
You'll be alright. That's what he would want.
So. That's what he would want, to be fair, yeah. He would. He won't give me any money, but he'd happily let me go and spend my own.
I wish I did a gap year.
Me too.
Should we do one now? Are you allowed to do one now in your early 30s? Can you
probably not as new fathers. I wouldn't have thought that would go down too well in our respective households. I hate to say it, Andy. I think that ship may have sailed.
That is a shame.
Yeah.
This is the section of the podcast that Mark usually hands us a bit of paper that says general banter. So has anybody got any general banter that they can bring to the table?
No, not off the top of my head. It doesn't really work like that, does it?
No. Well, I mean, it's we would just look at the Ryder Cup at the moment, won't we? But of course, by the time this goes out, we will know a bit more. Or like the Ryder Cup. I suppose I'm not really on banterish. I'm a bit annoyed that I haven't got Sky Television, so I can't actually see what's going on this fantastic event
that should be one of the gold. And seeing if it was on telly, and it's all on Sky, isn't it?
Yeah, which is a bit, so there's not much banter really if you're not.
I'm a bit annoyed that I have got Sky because I want to get rid of it, but I'm locked into a contract that I agreed and didn't really realise that I'd agreed.
Have you got the whole works? Sport?
I've got sport. I've not got nothing else. Okay. None of the movies or adult channels or anything like that.
Right.
But I am locked into Sky Sports for quite some time.
I've worked out how to do Netflix in my house.
Have you? And which one of the boys showed you that?
The one who's just gone. That's what I asked him to show before he went.
Yeah.
So I know how to do that now.
How are you finding Netflix?
Netflix, that's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
I quite like it.
What are you watching?
Pole Dark.
Pole Dark on Netflix. You can just watch that on normal telly, can't you?
No. The first series. I'm going back to the first series.
The matey down in Cornwall with his top off.
With the funny that Aidan, what's his name? And Demelza. Yeah, I like.
It's quite homoerotic, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I don't watch it for that, but I mean, it is a little bit. But it's So
Pole Dark on Netflix.
Yeah.
Nice. Big weekend. Like
Netflix can stick that on the poster now, can't they? Mike Bacon is quite good, actually.
Well, they do.
Netflix.
Yeah, I do like Netflix. Yeah, now I know how to work it. Yeah.
Good. General banter.
Done. Move on.
let's move on to something that involved no banter whatsoever, and that was Ipswich Town 0, Bolton Wanderers 0. Stuart Watson, your thoughts?
We'll keep this short and sweet. Frustrating afternoon, wasn't it? Do you know what? The red card went against them. It sounds a ridiculous thing to say, but it can be harder playing against 10 men. It changed the whole dynamic. The pressure was on Ipswich going into it. Everyone was going, okay, this is the game. We're at home. Bolton, whose own good form earlier in the season had dried up. I think Bolton had come into it with 1 point from their previous four games. So the expectation was there already, and as soon as Bolton went down to 10 men, the expectation from the crowd rose, the pressure on the Ipswich Town players rose, and they were unable to break them down. Bolton, I thought Ipswich were just starting to get on top leading up to that red card, and I think... You know, in that scenario, you want the penalty and for the man to stay on the pitch, don't you? And I think if it had been a penalty, 1-0, they'd have gone on to win the game, I think, if it had been 11v11. But it wasn't. Bolton parked two banks of four behind the ball, and Ipswich lacked. Now, this is where we get to it. Was it quality? Was it confidence? Was it a mixture of both?
Oh, it's both, isn't it? It's got to be both. The quality wasn't there. Jackson was the period that you were talking about Ipswich getting on top. They were using Jackson, and once you've got two lines of four, both of those lines sitting quite deep, how are you going to use a striker to get in behind that? And that's his game.
Yeah.
Nullified, weapon blunted.
It's definitely confidence is massive, and players start doing when Town score, they start doing things that they weren't doing literally 3 minutes previous. You know, little flicks will start coming off. People will be more confident taking things, but that's football in general. And the confidence will start to drop and continue to drop until they get that goal. But they just need a break. They just need a break, as you rightly said. That, you know, they were getting on top against Bolton, and then it worked against them because suddenly Bolton had a different game plan. But yeah, confidence, quality. There's a little lack of quality, I think. Let's be honest, you know. But I think confidence would probably bring out a little bit more quality that we're not seeing.
To me, I'd put more emphasis on confidence than quality at the moment. I've seen enough from these new recruits. I know people are now saying you sign from League One and Two, and that's the quality of side you get. I don't completely buy into that because I don't think any of them have looked utterly out of their depth. John Nolan's somebody that people are talking about now. I think we'll probably get on to him in more detail in a bit, but there's a player there in him, and he was taking up good positions in that Bolton game. But it was just confidence. He was just giving the ball away, as a lot of the Ipswich Town players were doing. So you're right, it's just how many times do you see it in a game where a goal changes the mood completely?
Totally.
One team grows in stature, the other team wilts. It's a massive, massive thing in any sport, and it shouldn't be underrated. And the hope is that they get that break, they get that first win, and everything changes. But the longer we go on, the harder it's going to be.
The quest for the next win, which we have been talking about for 2 months now, going into every game, that goes to Birmingham this weekend, tomorrow. We'll get onto that one in a minute. But the other big takeaway from the Bolton game was John Walters, who it looked like he was going to be the perfect signing for Ipswich, but it's all ended in an incredibly sad way. A partially ruptured Achilles, out for 6 months, and that takes him past the end of his loan. Brought on in this Bolton game, already nursing an Achilles injury, which so the Ipswich medical team and Paul Hurst have stressed was not at risk by going on, but it didn't feel right to us. I don't think we spoke about this, as it just didn't feel right.
Well, it's
the whole scenario.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing, isn't it? And it's easy to put that decision to involve John under the spotlight now. All I would say is I'm no medical expert, but I've followed football long enough now to know that Achilles injuries can rumble on, and they can be pretty troublesome. And they don't tend to be injuries that you take risks with.
Especially not in 35-year-olds.
No, and it does seem a little bit at odds to everything we've been hearing from Paul Hurst about, you know, this is a new era of sports science, and the whole point of this, you know, from the Marcus Evans on-camera interview was all going to be there's going to be far more emphasis on sports science, and that we're going to try and reduce a lot of the injuries from last season. You know, Paul's been telling us that's why Andre Dizel's not been involved, because my definition of match fitness is different to other managers' definition. And then he puts on John Walters with an Achilles injury, who's not been able to play on the Tuesday. It was a little bit of a desperation move. I think he sensed that they needed that win. Bolton were down to 10 men. John Walters, being the personality and the reputation he's got, was going to lift the crowd. It was going to lift, hopefully, the teammates. It was a calculated risk, and which was one that backfired quite spectacularly in the end, because Ipswich now are going to be footing the bill. Okay, they're not going to be paying all of his wages to Burnley, but that will still be a significant outlay on him between now and January.
Yeah. And they're a striker short, like leaving Ellis Harrison, Caden Jackson to shoulder that load with maybe a little bit of Freddie Sears in there.
I think more importantly, they're a character short, aren't they? They're an experienced character short, and I think that possibly is as as poor for the town as the actual missing him on the pitch, yep. because I think he genuinely came in, he looked at what he saw around him, he was very positive, Walters, and he said, oh, there's a lot of young talent here, they just need, you know. And we saw in the Norwich game when he was excellent, absolutely excellent that Norwich game, and you know, they could have beaten Norwich really, that, you know, and he's clear was going to be someone I think Hurst was going to put a bit of faith in, you know, leading up to Christmas and wanting to play him all the time. I mean, you know, look, so much happens on the training ground and in the dressing room, it's where so much happens, and someone like Walters is clearly going to be such a big character. Yeah. And they've lost that now. And I think
yeah,
that's
he's not just lost him on the pitch, no. He's now back at Burnley getting yeah. his rehab, you've not even got him around the around the training ground now, have you, as
and
well?
I think he was a big sort of foil for Chambo and Skews and people like that who have had to carry the brunt of seniority at that club since Hurst took over and have done well with it, I'm sure, you know, but Walls was probably someone else they could all bounce off and lean on a little, so I think that's as big a
blow.
But what does he do about it? Does he leave the burden on Jackson and Harrison, who both need to play if they're going to find confidence and show that they can do it at a championship level, or does he scrape her? But it looks like scraping a barrel if you're going out for a free agent. I know which way I'd go out of that. The free agent list is not particularly inspiring. We're talking Darren Bent, obviously emotional ties there, but some tight hamstrings that have shown that they can't always hold out. Gabby Agbonlahor, Dexter Blackstock, Victor Anichebe and Leon Best.
Well, yeah.
It's not the most inspiring of lists.
No, and Paul said yesterday that if you were to go out and sign a name, and I think you've referred to the ones that are out there, you know, are you doing it just to get a short-term lift? Are you doing it just for the sake of it? These guys are going to have no pre-season of note behind them. They're going to take a little while to get up to speed. Are you best off almost waiting, holding out till January now? Especially if you're playing one up front, which he has done in most of the games, I wouldn't be rushing out to get somebody.
I think Walters was a good fit, wasn't he? Walters was a good fit. As soon as he was available, Hurst did well there, jumped in, got him. Fans loved him. You just knew, you know, ex-town player. He just knew what you were getting. Some of the names you've just mentioned, with all due respect, you know that they've all been decent players and still, but there's not that tie. You wouldn't have the same. From the fans, for a start, they wouldn't have the same, you know, enthusiasm if Dexter Blackstock signed or Leon Best something. They would just be seen as a signing just to fill the gap for the sake of it.
Darren Bent's the one that would be a lot of people talking, but his fitness record's just not been there, has it? He's not played games consistently, and he's not scored goals consistently either.
Mm. Yeah, Darren Bent would be the one if you wanted to sign a striker and take a little bit of a... But it'd be a bit of a gamble, wouldn't it? Would it be a little bit of a gamble?
Big time. He's certainly not the same Darren. He's a completely different player to the one that left here.
You could see him coming on and lasting 7 minutes and his hammy going. Yeah.
Chef Kikuchi did this as well. Do you remember Chef Kikuchi when he came back? He came on to a thunderous reception. I cannot remember a louder noise inside Portman Road than when Chef Kikuchi came off the bench on his return. Chased his crisp packet around as he did, and he I think it was a hamstring he came off again, and that was it. It's a shame, but these things just don't seem to work out going back.
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it? But as I say, one up front, do you need to be? It would have to be the right type of player, otherwise, you know, put a bit of faith. We've mentioned earlier that I think Jackson's starting to show signs of the player that we hope he can be, gives Harrison a bit more of a chance now and opens the door for poor old Freddie Sears to come back in as well, who's not really been featuring so far. So
we'll talk about Freddie in a minute, but do you know who else it opens the door for? Mark will be listening. Mark will be delighted. Could it open the door for Aaron Drynan to return? You can recall players from non-league loans. Could it happen? He's not exactly
stranger
setting the world alight.
I would say it's highly unlikely, but stranger things have happened. I mean, Ben Morris is out on loan at Forest Green. Ben Falami is heading off to play with Australia for an extended period of time now. So you haven't got loads to even dip into the youth team with in terms of strikers. Jordan Roberts played up front for the 23s on Monday, who's very much a winger, really. So it's not a huge amount of sort of depth below those three senior strikers at this given moment.
And that's why Walters was such a precious signing, really, at such a good time, because he just was so different to anything they've got. As you said, you've just mentioned lots of players there who, possibly, but, you know, That's a big blow. Yeah, yeah, that's a big blow. No, absolutely not.
Yeah, should we talk about Freddie Sears? Because it transpires he has had a little bit of an injury that we weren't aware of. A tight groin.
Yeah, it's all a bit vague from Paul at the press conference yesterday. So, just to sort of chart his storyline, we all know that he went a couple of years barely scoring goal. Well, first, let's rewind to when he arrives from Colchester United and he hits the ground running from January. Him and Murphy, big man, little man. Sears was prolific and the fans really took to him early on. But then he gets converted to a winger. He always does a good job for the team. You can never question his work rate, but his confidence and his instinct just kind of dissipated. And he scores, he went a year, did he? A whole calendar year without scoring at one stage. And then you hoped, when Brian Clough came in for the back end of last season, that he got restored to a striker position. I think he scored two in the last two games. And you think, here we go. Here's someone that could really be revitalised under a new manager. Starts the first game under Paul Hurst against Blackburn. Granted, back out on the wing again. Am I right in saying that, Andy? Was he out?
The Blackburn game, out wide left.
On the left against Blackburn, but you're thinking he could be involved here. And then the last few weeks, he's not even been in the squad. He's not even been on the bench.
He's not been on the bench since the Sheffield Wednesday game.
Yeah, and Paul said, he seemed very vague. I sort of asked him, has it been injuries that have kept him out? Well, he's had a tight groin, but don't hold me to it. He might have been fit for some of the games, and it was all... It's clear that he's not high up in his thinking at the moment.
It's just not being played in his best position, and he hasn't been since Mick moved him out to the left wing, or every right wing, wherever wing he thought he was suddenly a winger. I've never felt Freddie Sears is a winger. Edwards is a winger. You know, I mean... Grant Ward, I prefer Grant Ward as a winger, quite honestly, than I do in the middle of the park. Freddie has been so unlucky. He just doesn't seem to get this run that other people seem to get, or a chance that other people seem to get. You know, I'd like to see him be playing off a big man. He's bustly, he's nippy, he scores goals.
His best position is in a front two, doubt about it, with up alongside a target man. Yeah. And unfortunately for Freddie, those sort of systems are not in vogue in football anymore. Everyone plays 4-2-3-1 or some sort of variation of that, with one striker and a little number 10 and wingers. And so I could understand why he might, if Ipswich were playing one up front, where he might not fit into that system, because he's not going to lead the line on his own. And we've discussed how he's not a winger, so you can kind of see if you're playing that system why you would not involve him. But when they played two up front against Brentford recently and Walters was injured and he still wasn't in the squad that day, that to me suggests
Freddie's energetic. Freddie is energetic, and if Paul Hurst is looking for people who've got energy and willpower and keep going, he's that type of player. You know, he's more a Paul Hurst player than some of the players who are there, you know. And so I feel very sorry for Freddie Sears, because I think he's got a lot more. I think he's got a lot to offer, and I think if Ipswich do offload him somewhere in the end, he'll probably go somewhere else.
He'll do you the high press, won't he?
We've
not seen enough evidence of this Paul Hurst high press, and Freddie Sears would certainly have the energy to do that.
Well, he'd do that in a wide role as well, wouldn't he? Like, not his best position, sure, but he would do that certainly. He's in the squad. He'll be at Birmingham this weekend, by the sounds of things. Certainly travelling. As part of a team that are 23rd in the Championship, but the club's youth teams, under-18s, led by Kieran Dyer, and the under-23s with Chris Hogg and Gerard Nash, are both top of their leagues, playing the same system that the Paul Hurst first team playing. There's a direct effort to sort of make these teams play in the same way, a pathway through the club, and it's working at youth level.
You watched the game, Andy, on Monday, the 23s, so you're best to tell us a bit about that one.
I asked the question and then it's kind of come.
Yeah, I've batted it back,
hasn't it? It was good. It was good. I've seen a few under 23 games this season. One was an 8-0 win over Hull, which was against a team of 16, 17, 18 year old Hull players. But this game against Coventry, there were quite a few senior players in the Coventry side. Jody Jones is in there, who's one of the best players in League One, League Two, coming back from injury. And Ipswich looked good. They popped the ball around well. They started incredibly fast, just like Hurst teams were doing at the start of the season. They were buzzing around a central striker for the first half, which was Jordan Roberts, Ben Fulami in the second half. Jordan Roberts scored after 10 minutes. Ben Vallamy scored two goals from the central striker position, and they were buzzing around the striker, support from the midfield, and the fullbacks were getting forward. So it shows that the system works, and just says to me that there's not the confidence to do it at first team level, and that's what it told
me.
The
two key things you've said there is midfield getting in support and the fullbacks bombing on, and we saw a bit of that in pre-season. I thought we saw more evidence of the Hurst system in those pre-season friendlies than we have probably in the Championship games thus far. I'm not adverse to one up front if those other elements happen around it, and at the moment, sadly, they're not.
The midfielders in this instance, the midfielders were André Dazel, who we obviously talk about an awful lot, a young French attacking midfielder called Idriss El Mazouni, and then from the right, Jack Lancaster getting involved, and from the left it was Vallamy in the first half, Roberts in the second. So El Mazouni and Dazel are kind of more of the advanced ones. Flynn Downs sat in the sitting role, and El Mazouni and Dazel, they combined really, really nicely for the fourth goal. That was the real evidence of the midfield getting forward. 1-2 on the edge of the box, work it in, and the ball ends up in the net. And that's how it can work.
I think under 23s and 18s being strong. I spoke to Kieran the other week, as the under 18s when we were at the press box, and he came out and had a little chat, and I said, "Oh, you're under 18s." He told me the under 18s doing well. Yeah, if they weren't doing so well, he wouldn't have said it to me. But he said, "Oh, under 18s doing well." And I said, "Yes, Kieran." I said, "But under 18 level, it's all about development, not results, isn't it?" And he just smiled. He said, "Ah, but results are nice, aren't they?" Mm-hmm. Which is true. And I just hope, you know, if these lads are top of their leagues with young teams, which they are clearly young teams, you just want to see a few of them get a chance. You know, I know you talk about Vallamy going off and stuff, but and the André Dazel story will go on and on. But, you know, you just want to see one or two of them just chucked into that, or just put on the bench.
Yeah.
Not put straight into starting lineup. So put on the bench and just see, you know, what can happen. Yeah. And I don't know. It's far better, isn't it, for Ipswich Town fans love young players. Mm. So it's far nicer the under 23s or 18s are where they are than struggling away getting beaten. Whatever they, you know,
Lancaster's the one for me.
Is he?
Yeah. Look, it's not for me to pick Paul Hurst's team for him, but could it benefit them to have a wild card on the bench who's clearly brimming with confidence? Hurst has spoken already about how much he likes Lancaster's attitude, his confidence, his bubbly character, cheeky chappy.
Went on loan at Bury Town last season.
Was he? Mm-hmm. Was he one of those?
Yeah, and I mean, that's just something, to me, that's... I'm always really impressed, because obviously I know a lot about non-league and love non-league. I'm always really impressed when players who are pros at a club will take a little step back just to get game time, and Lancaster was one of those who went to Bury Town, and apparently he was excellent, and his
rebound
was excellent. And he came back to Ipswich.
What's he like, Andy? Describe
him. I've seen him play behind the striker in a kind of 10 position, and the last few times I've seen him, he's wide right, and he's busy,
yeah.
He's confident, and
he's quite a tall lad as well.
He's direct, and that's what I like. He's direct. His first thought is to head towards goal, be that driving inside, running, be that getting a pass inside to someone in a better position than him. And he's direct, he's confident, and he just wants the ball. And for me, the level between under 23s and the first team is a massive job. It's a different sport almost.
Yeah.
But could having a wild card on the bench in a tight game that you chuck on, we need a goal here, let's chuck on a wild card who the opposition know nothing about. He's full of confidence. He might just pull something out of the bag. Was it Shane McLaughlin in one of the last games at the end of last season did the similar thing, came on, he won a penalty, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Within minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, just to emphasise what you've said, to perhaps kind of provide the counter argument, 23's football, I think sometimes people can get a little bit carried away by someone scored a hat trick for the 23s, or they've done this for the 23s. It's nothing like the intensity of Championship football. I mean, I know some of these games have been played at Portman Road of an evening, but usually a windy Monday afternoon at the training ground in front of a handful of people, you cannot compare the two. I mean, the guys are doing everything asked of them. They're playing to the style of football. They're winning football matches. They can do no more. But I'm not one that gets overly carried away by success in those levels. But yeah, I can see what you're saying. I've got certainly a wild card on a bench.
That's all it would be. We're not talking about chucking these kids into starting lineups playing three or four of them, but on a seven-man bench.
But you've got to, they've got to have, you know, young players have got to have this thought that they're making progress and that they will get an opportunity. You know, how many players, there's players playing in the Premiership of 16, 17. There was a young lad came, a 15-year-old the other day at Fulham,
You
know, now, I'm not saying, as we say, you don't just chuck all these players, that's not what you do, but if you've got an under-23 team who's top of the league and unbeaten, right, you know, to have one of them on the bench out of eight, how many, seven subs, is, I know there's, you can say, well, yeah, well, that's, someone else is going to have to, but you're making a bit of a statement, really, that this is a progress, and this guy has really stood out in that, in the under-23s. I mean, Jack Langston, I think Jack Langston's about 18 or 19, 18.
18.
But I mean, there's probably players who are in their 20s now. You know, they're not 16-year-olds anymore. That, you know, so they're either going to start making some progress or, you know, or they're not.
What are we thinking then, Stu, that you are bailing on us for a week, but it's a big old week, isn't it?
Yeah.
A deserved holiday. Let me be the first to say
goodness knows deserved. What position, what situation I'll be coming back to post-Swansea. Next three games, Birmingham away. It was for all the world looking like this was going to be a meeting between the Championship's two winless sides. Birmingham, by all accounts, have had a very similar start to Ipswich in that they were winless, but there were more positives than negatives to take from some of their performances. And then they go and win 2-1 at Leeds, the division's
we all saw that
best
I had it on
in
my
form side.
I had it on my fixed odds.
Did you?
Yeah, Birmingham away win.
That's a result that sums up the Championship, isn't it?
It does sum up the Championship, Stu. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, obviously, we're getting quite expert at the Championship now after 115 years in it. But I mean, people still talk about the Championship being the toughest league in England, and the more I believe that it really is a ridiculous.
It's the most competitive
from top to bottom.
I think you'd struggle to find a league that has shock results that aren't shock results on such a regular basis. And I guess that result gives hope to Ipswich as well. If Birmingham can go and win at Leeds, then you know the tide could turn for Ipswich at the most unlikely of moments. You know, we all thought, you know, look at the Brentford game. Ipswich could quite easily have nicked that at the death when Jackson went through on goal there. And Brentford look a bloody good side as well. So it can happen when you least expect it. So Birmingham away this weekend. Then talking of when you least expect it, Middlesbrough at home next Tuesday night, who are going rather nicely under Pulis. And then Swansea away, long trip to Swansea away the following weekend. And then we have another international break.
That's 12 league games at that point, isn't it? You've done some number crunching.
Yes, you were all over this, Stu.
Stu had his stats calculated.
He had like one of them, what they call he had a huge, great calculator out, and he was pressing all these buttons, and it was fantastic. He was coming up with all these stats and facts.
He just kept shouting out.
Yeah, 40% chance, well, and we're saying what? 35.6% chance. What is he talking about?
Everybody's been talking about, obviously.
That's the Da Vinci.
It was a bit like that.
I did go too deep,
but I was committed and I stuck with it. I'm trying to find the numbers on my phone now while we're talking. So the idea behind it was, everyone, the first question is you get three international breaks, don't you, between the start of the season and Christmas. We've had one. The next two tends to be the point where people assess how the season's going, and is that the time when managers change? So I kind of looked at the last 10 years of the Championship and looked at teams that are in the bottom three at the 9-game point, which is where we're at now, the 12-game point, which will be the next international break, and the 16-game point, which will be the following international break. And unsurprisingly, if you're in the bottom three, the longer the season goes on, the bigger percentage chance you've got of going down. But it still wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I think it was about 30-odd% if you're in the bottom three now. It rises to 40-something percent after 12 games. And even after 16 games, if you're in the bottom three, it becomes a bit of a 50-50 shot whether you stay up or not. But, you know, it kind of backs up this very early days marathon, not a sprint type theory. Now, of course, a lot of those clubs that did go on to beat the drop did change manager.
Ipswich
potentially twice.
Must have been in that Ipswich.
The McCarthy, well,
Well, McCarthy took over. Keane was
in. They featured a couple of times in your analysis, didn't they? Ipswich. Are you still trying to find it?
I found it now. 33% after 9 games, 43% after 12, 53% after 16. So this will be the way Evans is probably thinking. It's that kind of... He wants to stick with the project. He's got a lot to lose with if Paul Hurst was to go. He'd end up with some serious egg on his face, having given it the big talk about the five-point plan and a long-term project and all the rest of it. He's going to be very reluctant to get rid of Hurst. It would cost as well, you know, to pay up contracts and then back a new manager to change the squad in their mould. So he's not going to want to do this. But there may become a point where he's weighing up those percentages, and if we're getting towards a 50-50 chance of relegation here...
He's probably read your piece, Steve, to be honest. I mean, he's looked at this percentage now and thinking, hang on.
But no, he will know that in his own mind, that there comes a tipping point.
Yeah.
And, you know, when does that tipping point come? Because he will not risk League One. He will quite happily swallow his pride and say, I've made the wrong choice, if there's any chance of League One. So it's going to be fascinating when that tipping point is, and if indeed we'll get to that point. We obviously all hope that it improves in the next few games and we don't have to have that conversation
certainly
anymore.
As an aside, have either of you ever had egg on your face?
No, I haven't.
Wasn't there an incident with you and some eggs?
Yeah. Oh, I tell a lie, actually. I have, yeah. This is very interesting. This is many years ago. Oh, gosh. Many, many years ago. As a young apprentice, when I finished my apprenticeship, I was tied to a lamppost.
In
Lower Brook Street, which you were allowed to do back then before, the PC world struck in good and proper. I was tied to a lamppost and had rope wrapped around me, and they cracked eggs on my head.
Threw flour on me,
and left me with half a pint of beer that I couldn't reach because my hands were tied.
You know when people talk about the throwbacks to football dressing rooms in the old days and how the young apprentices used to get effectively bullied by their senior colleagues. This was very much the same in journalism, wasn't it? You weren't a journalist then.
My early days, and that was how. Yes, that's how it started. Yeah, at the end of your apprenticeship, which was tough enough in itself with all sorts of strange things going on. My final year was up. Yeah, I was actually carried by seven blokes down the stairs, and the managing director was walking up the stairs as we went past, and he just went, morning.
That was fine, was it?
That was And I was tied to the lamppost. It was February, because it started snowing, and I had a sign put over me, which I won't say what it said, but it was not very pleasant.
Mark wants more swearing on the podcast, so if you want to say...
No, you don't want to know this one. But anyway, so eggs are splat in my head, and I was there about 5-6 hours.
Okay. Good, cool story.
And I took everybody to the Court of Human Rights and I won nothing.
And you're still here, and they've all gone.
I was told to grow up and get on with it. Yeah. So that was the end of it, yeah.
A different era.
Very much so. Were you used to like smoking cigars and drinking whiskey at your desk? Is that...
Oh, that's how it used to be years ago, yeah. Gosh, I used to sit there, yeah, great big fat... I used to sit between two guys who smoked like troopers. I know, you know, in the work, you can't imagine now, can you? They smoke like troopers in between. I said there won't be puffs of smoke coming up.
You went down the social club at lunchtime and probably had one extra pint.
A couple of pints and come back to work. Yeah, fall asleep for an hour, wake up, finish the paper. No, it wasn't.
Go downstairs and collect your expenses in big brown paper envelopes.
Cash in hand. Yeah. I'm getting away too easy. I must be quiet, otherwise we'll think it was a terrible stat. But it was a different world, yeah. Very much so. But the egg I have now is egg on my toast.
Good. How do you like your eggs?
I don't mind a boiled egg, actually. I like dippy eggs. I must confess, soldier eggs. You know, do you have soldiers?
I'm aware of that now.
Well, you'll sort of look at me as much as saying, what's he going to say now? Is it 3.5 minutes or 4? You see, this is always my... I think it's 4 minutes for the egg.
I like a runny egg. I don't mind a bit of snot in your white. I'll be honest. More of a poached man myself. Should we move on to the mailbag, unless you've got any stories of eggs?
Scrambled, if you're asking. Let's move on.
Scrambled.
It's a good egg. I make the best scrambled egg. Right, let's move on to the mailbag. I have got them up on my phone from your lovely tweet earlier, Stu. Should we start at the top, or should we be selective? Should we start at the top?
Go on.
Ollie Magnus, who appears to be some kind of cyclist. Has Nolan been a disappointment as an attacking midfielder? The concern for me is that he has struggled to adapt, and this is a big reason why we are not creating many chances.
Has he been a disappointment? You would have to say yes thus far. Is there a player there? at championship standard? I would say definitely yes. I think we've seen enough signs. I think that, to use two examples, the whole game, I think we've seen games where he's been very neat and tidy on the ball, tight little turning circle, treats it with care, keeps it moving. But he was too static for me, and he wasn't playing that 10 role enough. I think he said when he arrived, he sees himself more as an 8, more of a box-to-box type than the archetypal number 10, which is where Ipswich need him. And then for the Bolton game, I thought he took up some really good... It was the flip side of that. I thought he took up some really good positions when they were trying to break down Bolton. He was getting on the edge of the box. He was trying to be in the right places. Unfortunately, when he got the ball, and we've just looked at some of the stats, I think he had more touches of the ball than anyone else on the pitch, yep. Which tells you that he wasn't shying away from it. He was getting into the right areas. Unfortunately, he wasn't very good on the ball. He just gave it away. It was hot potato, and everything he tried didn't come off. So if he can put those two aspects together, I think there's a good player there. I think there's goals in him as well. There have been times where he's arrived late in the box. He's had headers. He's had shots from the edge of the box. Hopefully, once he... Going back to confidence, yeah. Once he finds his feet at this level, I do think I would persist with him and give him chance to sort of play his way into this level of football.
We both said before the last game that we both fancied him to score the winner, didn't we?
Yeah.
It didn't happen,
but you know, what's the alternative? Some people will say take him out the team after last weekend. You know, is that going to help his confidence? How much of these players do you need to give them a little run now to kind of think, take away the fear factor? You know, all this chopping and changing from Paul Hurst. I know his logic is he doesn't want anyone to feel too safe in the side, and he wants everyone to feel like they've got a chance of playing. But for me, when confidence is low, sometimes you need to almost give a bit of a signal to the players that one bad game is not going to see you drop out of the side. So.
And Nolan's pretty crucial, quite honestly, I think, from all the signings he made. I think Nolan's a crucial one. And goals is, you know, from a team that's not scoring goals, they're going to have to come from somewhere. Yeah. And midfield particularly, if they're going to play one up front, midfield have got to score goals. Well, you know, with all due respect to Cole Skews, he's not going to suddenly get you 20 goals.
No.
So, and Cole Skews is rightly going to be a pretty, you know, standard player each week in, week out, and rightly so. So someone like Nolan's got to score as well.
It's the key position on the field for me. Paul Hurst's sides do not have prolific goal scorers. If you look back through Shrewsbury and Grimsby, they tend to have a striker who makes space or holds the ball up, and then the goals are spread out amongst the wingers. Nolan, I think, scored 12 for Shrewsbury last year. As you say, the deeper midfielders doesn't look like there's going to be loads of goals from there. So just makes you wonder, you know, we talk about too much change in the summer. If you swapped Nolan for Waghorn in these first few games, how much of a difference would that have made goals wise and points wise? It's ifs, buts and maybes, but I still think that Nolan can come good, but there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders to want him to be the main man in his first year at this level.
Do you think he's maybe suffered a little from the looming figure of Andre Dizel, who is obviously a 10? That's where people want to see him play.
I don't see Dizel as a 10, personally.
But I think people do, though. In general, though, I think people see him as the one-to-one pick, the lock. And that's what Nolan is in the team to do. And he's maybe suffering because there's a clamour for a player that just isn't near it at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, quite possibly, yeah. I think now when I've seen people picking their team for the weekend, get Nolan out, put Andre in...
But Hurst has told us enough about Andre Dizel. It's not going to happen, is it? He's not suddenly going to suddenly start, do you think?
My opinions on the Dizel situation sort of change by the week. I can see where people are coming from in terms of double standards, in terms of the fitness levels that are required to get in the Paul Hurst first team setup. You know, my definition of match fit is different to other manager's definition, so I'm not going to rush Hughes back, I'm not going to rush Bishop back, we're going to wrap Andre in cotton wool. We've had all the sports scientists have looked at him and they've seen physical deficiencies, and the last thing we want for the kid is to have another year out of the game at such a crucial stage of development. But on the flip side of that, he's managed to play 5-6 games for the 23s now. Surely your risk of injury is as great in a 23 game as it is to the first team. The counter argument you can just about get away with is the intensity of under 23 football is completely different to the Championship. But if you land on your knee and twist it, that can happen at any time, can't it? So if Walters was deemed fit enough on his word, essentially, to play, and Jordan Graham went straight into the team days after signing on loan and having not played a lot of football, that kind of negates the argument around Dizel not being ready. And okay, Hurst is saying he can only have moments in games, but fine, but give him 10 minutes at the end of games, give him 15 minutes. The Bolton game would have been ideal for him when you're trying to break down 10 men and you want somebody who can pick a pass. And look at the assist he had against West Ham in that final warm-up game. Maybe he'd have been the man who could have come on and done that. Okay, he can't do it for 90 minutes, but the fact he's not really trained with the first team much and he's not been on the bench just maybe starts to suggest maybe he just isn't Hurst's cup of tea. I don't know.
I think Hurst has backed himself a little bit of a corner in all this business about suddenly bringing in this sports science stuff and we'll protect the lad and deficiencies have shown up. And it's because now he's going to be damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. Because if he suddenly brings Dizel on and the poor lad, something happens to him, God forbid, you know,
yeah.
Hurst is going to be going, well, there you go. I told you, we said, you know, all along, but you can't, how long has that gone for? Because it could be this time next year where we're still saying, well, yeah, you know, I think it's a tricky one.
In defence of the club on the Walters thing and this whole double standards thing, I think people have jumped on the fact that John's a senior pro and he told us he was fit. He did then back that up. He qualified it by saying they'd actually sent some scans off to a specialist who's looked at Walter's Achilles over a number of years and said it looked in its best physical condition than it had for 5 years. So they did get some medical advice. It wasn't like they just went on instinct John says he's okay, so he plays. They did get medical advice. They didn't go against medical advice. So
but that medical advice end up proving totally incorrect.
Well,
but that can happen. As much as I like the sound of sports science, but injuries do happen.
I love the sound of sports science, but I think sometimes you can over-analyse. You're not careful.
Analyze one of those things.
One
of those is right.
But you know what I mean? You can, if you're not careful, you can start to overlook at things and just see everything for everything. And I think the thing with Dizel is the trouble is people are saying things now that if something was to happen to him, everyone's just going to go, there you go. And how long before it suddenly he is definitely okay?
Yeah.
Because there's no definitely okay. As we assume, there's no definitely okay at all.
Let me say something unpopular about Andre Dizel. And he is got the potential to be anything he wants to be. He's a fantastic player. He's got so much quality. But I did kind of see where Hurst was coming from in terms of, has he been put on a bit of a pedestal here because of his name, because of who his father is, because the fact that he had the fairy tale debut scoring at 16. He's only had a handful of games in men's football at the end of the day.
And I think it starts, isn't it?
And if you went back through those games and analysed them, he's had, I can't remember who it was, but he came on at half time and he ran the show and he was very good in that game at home. But the other games, I'll be honest, there's been other games where he's looked a little bit lightweight still, and he looked a little bit like he's still getting up to the speed of Championship football. And he's just had an entire year out of the game. You know, no, it's very difficult when you've had a year out to be straight back up to speed. The West Ham friendly in some ways raised everybody's expectations surrounding not only Andre, but also Downs and Naidam, because they had good games that day. But West Ham were a few weeks behind in their preparations. They weren't really fully at it at that stage. So perhaps we overread into that. But I can see it from both points of view. You know, I speak to Jason. I speak to people at the club. Andre loves football. And this sounds silly, but not all footballers are in love with football. For some, it's more of a job than others. Andre studies the game. He loves the game. He's like, you know, jumpers for goalpost type mentality. He's itching to play, but sometimes do you need other people to make decisions for you and just rein you in a little bit? So I can see where the club's coming from, but also I can see that sometimes there's a little bit of mixed logic in terms of what Paul's saying. In answer to your question, as I keep saying, I keep changing my mind on it, really. It's such a difficult scenario.
I think we've covered Harvey's question, which is about Dizel. Thank you, Harvey. And we covered the first half of Gareth's question about where goals are going to come from, but he also asks, is Matthew Pennington a better right back than Janoi Danasian? And I would say that depends on what you want from a right back, if I'm honest. Both of them did. I've been impressed with Danasian. His being left out has puzzled me and many others during the last few weeks. But Pennington looked solid enough, didn't he? But without offering much sort of going forward.
Yeah, that was my instinct coming away from the game, that I thought against 10 men, do you need both your fullbacks starting to show a bit of attacking adventure? Knudsen was doing that, and I thought, well, Pennington's a centre back at right back, he's solid enough, but was he providing enough in an attacking sense? We looked back at the heat map, didn't we, yesterday, and Pennington was actually more advanced than probably both of us appreciated at the time. And he has played right back in the past for Leeds during his loan spell. It felt a little bit like sort of trying to crowbar his better players into the team, which was something, it was often a criticism levelled at Mick, you know, in terms of getting Nsiala back into the team. He had to sort of push Pennington out, and we've had years of a centre back at right back and all that sort of stuff again. But I thought Pennington, you've got to have Pennington in your team because he has been very, very good since he's arrived from Everton.
The fans have really been positive about Pennington since he arrived, and you know, I've heard very few bad reports about him. Seen, you know, and I think if Hurst again is saying, you know, you're going to have to perform to be in my team, Pennington has done that, and in that position of centre half. Now, you know, okay, so another player comes back into the reckoning, but why would you change the centre pairing?
I think not dropping Pennington is the right thing to do.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
You're saying that if you play well, you stay in the team. There's a little bit mixed messages there with Danasian, who has played well at times, and he's lost out. Okay, we've had this loan situation, but I'd be very frustrated if I was Janoi. I think he was named... He looked a little bit all at sea as left wing back against Brentford first half in what was a tough half for the team in general, but I think he was actually named one of the sponsors' man of the matches after that game, and did really well at right back. So again, he's acquitted himself well against Brentford in the second half at right back. He did well against Villa at right back. He did well against Derby at right back. And yet he's kind of been dropping in and out of the side. So as a player, you just want to see a bit of consistency. Yeah. If I play well, I stay in the team. And he is the one out of all the selections that I think we're all finding it hard to kind of find the reasoning behind coming in and out of the side, the loan situation. Aside.
Part of me thought I looked at the Bolton game, I thought, does he want Nsiala in there to combat McGuinness, who is a 6'4" hulking striker, which, fair enough, but then what does he do now? Because you now that will be the back four that starts tomorrow, aside from injuries, wouldn't it?
I thought so.
You brought sort of a horse for course in, and then you've still got the decision to leave Danasian out, which is unfair on him. So,
and talking of fairness, Nsiala was playing very well, and Paul Hurst has sort of said in his short time there he'd probably been their most consistent player so far. He gets a very, very harsh red card, ridiculous suspension. So he's probably thinking, well, in fairness to him, he didn't deserve his red card and he was playing well, so why shouldn't he come back into the side? But sometimes you get injured or suspended and someone else comes in and plays well, you just have to suck it up and be patient again. But I'd have gone with the same back four with Pennington, Chambers at centre back and Danasian as my right back, but having seen the performance against Bolton, I can absolutely understand why you might stick with Pennington at right back.
Let's delve back into the mailbag. Jonathan Cook is talking about injuries again. Is it just bad luck that we've had so many players prone to injury? Higham, Hughes, Bishop, Tazel, Adeyemi. I don't know if it's bad luck. Like, we're not medical people, but that's quite a long list of
long term as well.
Of players who have bodies that, look, sometimes people's bodies let them down. That has happened in football forever. But there is quite a long list of players who have these recurring, unexplainable, really niggling injuries.
Yeah, I would say a lot of it is bad luck. I mean, if you look back through how some of these injuries happened, like the McGoldrick continually breaking down, they were often described as sort of freak incidents. I think Haim at one stage blocked a ball on the line in training and twisted his ankle. McGoldrick just landed on something funny. And they happen in football. And I think Ipswich actually had a very lucky season with injuries when they made the playoffs. They barely had a key injury of note during that season. So you go through cycles where you're very lucky or very unlucky.
And I think fans understand, but you get frustrated and just wonder what players do with themselves all day, you know, being injured and being out of turn, like Adeyemi's out, Hughes out, you know, Bishop. And I think, going back to Kieran Dyer again, who had lots of injuries during his career, you know, and he will tell you it's the worst thing. It is the absolute worst thing to come in every morning and lay on a bench and be having physio. And while everyone goes home, you come back in the afternoon, you have to do it. It's not, you know, there can't be a professional footballer who gets any enjoyment out of the situation of injury. Bad luck. Of course, it's bad luck. It can't be anything else. But sometimes I think fans sort of wonder what these guys are doing, and I'm sure there's nothing Teddy Bishop loved to be more than bossing the midfield in the Championship.
Absolutely. And I used the example of Kieran in the last podcast and Michael Owen speaking quite openly about, you know, his injury woes over the years. As much as fans are frustrated, they'll be feeling it 100 million times more.
You can't just pay. I know they're well rewarded, right, and they get £1,000 a week and all this other, but the boredom factor must be massive. I mean, you know, just to come in to just lay on a bench all day and read a book. I mean, it's the sort of thing like going on holiday and just doing nothing for the first couple of weeks of it, or first month, or retiring and doing nothing. But after so many months or whatever, it just must be do your head in.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a, potentially reading between the lines, it's becoming a bit of a psychological factor for some of these guys like Hughes and Adeyemi in particular, where it seems like they're just getting back to it. And then Hurst was saying, you know, we asked Emir Hughes' update and he kind of sighed, exhaled. Emir was, you know, he said, well, we thought we were getting somewhere. He's trained most of this week and then he's come off the training pitch and he's not sure about his knee. It's puffing up a bit behind his knee. And there was a bit of an insinuation from him about Tom Adeyemi needs to kind of play through the pain barrier a little bit and you're never, ever going to be 100% fit. But I can also see it from the player's point of view that if you have felt it go before, you've not got that trust in your body again, and
your mind is a very powerful thing, and no one's putting things on, but certainly your mind can. This is life in general. This isn't just football. You know, life in general. I mean, your mind is a very powerful tool, and certainly football. They feel any, especially an injury prone footballer feels anything anywhere, like behind the knee or on the side or my hamstring or that pull. You know, it's going to play on.
Yep. Yeah. All I would say on the luck front is that Ipswich, some of these players had injury records before they came to Ipswich, and maybe Hughes was a bit of a punt at the time because he'd had a lot of injuries throughout his career. If you look at the number of games he'd played season upon season, and they handed him a 4-year contract. You know, he was such a popular figure during his loan, but that was to break out of your usual 2-year deal and give him longer, given his injury record, was perhaps a bit of a gamble on the club's point of view.
Lots of questions about injuries, actually. I think we covered most of the points. Paul Ben Notley simply asks, what is a Tom Adeyemi? An injured midfielder.
This is the thing now. It becomes players like this become a bit of it becomes a bit of a joke. You know what's happening with Tom Adeyemi. You go back to people like Darren Anderton was always a bit of a laughing stock for being a sick note, and people like that. They will be hating it. You know, they're not being able to do the thing that they love and are paid to
do.
So
it's because they're so well rewarded. And football's gone on this dynamic now of players getting so much money that people think they're literally just laying there with a cigar, being paid £8,000 a week. Bang. You know, well, gosh, I could do that. Well, it's not. There's far more to it than that. I mean, mentally, it's no fun. You know, and surely it's one of those who want to play football, don't they?
Should we wrap it up there, guys, and go and do some real work?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah?
Go and do some real work.
Well,
we better do a newspaper. We've
got the newspaper to do.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Have you got anything to do? Are you right today?
Yes, I've got a few things to do today. Some big non-league stuff coming up this weekend, of course, which you all know about. And, we've got find out how the Ryder Cup's getting on, I suppose. Have we got Sky?
No.
No.
We'll go around Andy's. Should we go around Andy's for lunch? He's got Sky.
Well, you could do it if you want.
Oh,
you could sit at my new table.
Sit on your table? You got any chairs?
You could probably sit at the chairs. Yeah. Okay. All the benches up to you. You can see the new back door, meet the cat, all that kind of thing if you want.
We can have scrambled egg.
That sounds like a great lunch. I'm going to get yours watching the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
I'll
have to have Dippy Soldiers though with my heart. I can't have.
You'll have to explain to me this Dippy Soldiers thing. I've never heard of it.
Have you never heard of the Dippy bread?
No. Soldiers.
Have you never heard? Oh, never heard of Dippy Soldiers. Unbelievable. Well, the bread you slice. Oh, you know you dip them in, don't you? Dippy Soldiers.
Friend.
You'd have heard.
We were joking.
It's just another one of our funny
you football funny, wags
funny jokes, and that is why the people come back to listen, because it's really funny.
We got to the
funny.
General bants in the end, didn't we?
Yeah, we found our bants. Right. We found our bants. Let's leave it there. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you like what you heard and you haven't already, subscribe on whatever. Cheers, Shu. Whatever podcast provider you use, check out the websites and everything. Keep us happy. And we'll see you next time. Go on, Stu.